Welcome to a summer edition of Lyden af Whitehead Danes. Today we're talking only about sports psychology and mental coaching, and we're doing this because of Delhi's interview 4 days ago with Gary Neville on The Overlap. And today I am very happy to say welcome to Henrik Jarsbæk. You're a consultancy in sports psychology and you're a mental coach for professional footballers. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. And before we get into the Delhi interview and some of the many, many questions that I have and some of our listeners have about his situation and what it means generally as a case study for players' psychology and mental coaching in the game, or the lack of mental coaching in the game, why don't you introduce yourself to our listeners? Who are you and what's your work exactly?
Yes, my name is Henrik and I am 36 years old and I work with mostly football players, and I work with them with all the things that's going on inside of their head. So it can be like anxiety before a match, it can be performance anxiety, it can be like normal nerves, it can be traumas like Delhi is having here, it can be a lack of confidence, because if you're an offensive player, you haven't scored a goal in 5 matches and the crowd has started booing you, or you're not in the starting lineup anymore. So it's like, for football players, they have an exam every weekend and they need to perform both in training but also in the matches, and so they always have something to work on, and that is what we are working on if they decide to open up for it. And of course there's a lot of players, like you see like with Dele Alli, that is not open to working with it, but then you see like the effect it actually has when he is getting to open up about it, but also the effect it has been having for him not opening up about it.
Yeah, so we'll see, I guess, in the future what effect it will have now that he has opened up about it and how it will affect his game, which is something we're going to talk about as well. Just to our Danish listeners, we're doing this in English because I devour podcasts on a daily basis. I basically vacuum clean the market for Spurs podcasts and football podcasts. And I think maybe because it's summer, I've been quite surprised that there haven't been any podcasts in all of my feeds with experts like yourself lifting this conversation up to a level of expertise. And so I actually wanted to have this conversation and also offer English listeners, English Spurs fans out there, and well, I guess Spurs fans in the whole world, hopefully, the possibility to listen to this. So for any Danish listeners out there that are not the best in English, I apologize. We're always open for feedback and criticism, but for now, this is the decision, and hopefully we can reach more people, because I, Henrik, think this is an incredibly interesting and very important subject. First of all, Delhi's interview, I think, shocked a lot of people. Personally, as a fan, I love Dele Alli, which, you know, I think a lot of Spurs fans did. Then a lot of people, I think, had turned on him. Many of us didn't know why his decline came, what happened. None of us did, obviously, before he came out. And the emotional release, just for me as a fan, when he was telling his story, was incredible. I was crying my eyes out. I had to stop the video. I've heard many people not saying to me, I can't even watch this. So I imagine for me as a fan, it's very extraordinary. How is it extraordinary for you as a mental coach?
Yeah, but I think first of all, it's you and other Spurs fans, of course, have an emotional attachment to Dele and the experiences you have with him on the pitch. But from a psychological perspective, we have something called mirror neurons. We kind of mirror what you're doing. So if you're seeing somebody on the stage doing a public speaking and he's very anxious, you kind of resemble that inside of you. So partly, probably some of the reasons is also that you are mirroring some of the emotions that Dele is carrying. But also what you're also mirroring in him is also that relief, because you can always judge how he's feeling and what he's going through. But seeing this interview, for me, it seems like I would actually put my name out saying, like, I think he's going to perform pretty well now, if he's going to get through his injury. But seeing the way he has been processing everything, even though it's only 3 weeks ago he came out of rehab, he seems so relieved. It's like, it is the effect you often see here in the meeting room, in the psychology room, that people lose like 20 pounds after a session. Like they come in with their head bent down and then they go up with the chest high, because they just lose some mental weight. And I also think that's probably what many of you have been seeing then, and also resembling. But for me in the interview, I think it's what pops out the most. It's so remarkable, because you don't see, it's very, very big issues like being molested, dealing with drugs, getting disciplined and moving to another continent and getting adopted. It's like so many things in such short time. And he's, there's so many more details there that can fill probably like two more episodes. But besides that, I think I really enjoyed it, because I know it's going to help so many people and other players, because everybody's thinking that, which is Deli is also saying, that I think I'm so unique, and all the issues, the problems that I'm having, it's just me, and others are not having this and faced with this. And that is actually making it worse for yourself, because then you're not getting into it, you're just suppressing it. And that is also what for me stands out for this interview, that people like Dele Alli and most other, especially male players, they're suppressing their emotions, their experiences and their traumas. And if you have a very, very bad strategy, it will always be to suppress what you're experiencing. Ventilating everything that you're going through and you're thinking, your worries, will always make things better.
And just to hang on to this, the ventilating, the opening up, can that be anyone, like teammates, family, partners?
Yeah, in short, I would say it can actually be everybody. And if you are so privileged as a person or a player that you can talk to your wife or your husband or your teammate about it, then it's great, because just opening up about it, ventilating and talking it through will give you a certain amount of relief. And also, it always tends to be converted from a very negative and unconstructive inner experience to a more productive and more flowing freely experience. And just opening up about it, putting words in it, will actually get you moving. So you're starting the process of dealing with it. And it's mainly a part of, are you actually diving into the problem or are you not doing that? So, but of course, if you open up about it finally and you experience that people don't understand you, it's going to be a short conversation, of course. And I also, in my opinion, can see that it's very, very difficult for Gary Neville to cope with how should he respond to it. And it's also very difficult. So, of course, in my opinion, you should find somebody that you trust and where you have a good chemistry and you feel safe, and because they have the know-how to deal with what you're saying. Because otherwise, you'll get 50% further because you are putting words into it, but you won't get all the way to the destination, and which Dele probably have gotten now in his rehab, where people can put words in it and put it in another context, and also start developing from here, so moving on forward.
Let's go into the case, and then let's go into general aspects of football players and the problems they struggle with. I wanted to, first of all, dip a little bit into his story, because it's quite unusual from the outside. Well, it's obviously quite unusual. You mentioned yourself, all these things happening before he's even turned 10, and we can also mention that he relates getting hanged off a bridge by someone. So basically near-death experience and all these things, until he suddenly comes to a foster, like a family taking care of him, a really good family that he has a lot of love for today. And a family who really tried getting him to open up, because they could feel something was wrong. And he kept saying no to them and lying to them that he was fine. And I wondered, how rare is something like this? Because you do see other footballers coming from different continents, different backgrounds, and making it to the top. Do you think he's like a one of a kind? And of course, these are really, really crazy traumas, but a trauma is a trauma, right? And how many footballers out there do you reckon carry trauma to some extent, like he has.
Yeah, as you're saying, I think it's very, very important to say that trauma is trauma. And the mistake that many players and normal people tend to do is to compare my own experience to others. So right now, if I'm very lonely or depressed or anxious for what I'm doing, I tend to have an ability to compare it to what the Ukrainian civilization are facing with right now. And in that regard, of course, what I'm facing with is just like, oh, come on, you just need to man up and get through it. This is nothing. But you shouldn't compare what others are experiencing. Trauma is trauma. And the most important thing is, do you deal with trauma? Don't you deal with trauma? So everybody's dealing with trauma. And I can't say that it's a part of a unique case with Delhi. And I don't think that, I think it's the numbers are small in having such a troubled and traumatic childhood. But everybody has been experiencing something. So, and a person experiencing being beaten by the parents or the coach or whatever it is can have the same amount of trauma. Trauma is a subjective personal scale. So, and if somebody is having other issues, you can't say being raped is worse than being abused or being mentally abused or physical abused. You can't like rate it in regards of each other. It is what it is. And it's all about, what are you experiencing? This amount of trauma.
So what is it? What happens? Can you go into what happens to the body and the mind when we experience trauma? And something that's really heavy for you can be light for me, and vice versa, because it's about how we deal with it subjectively, as you say. But what happens when we're not able to deal with it? Can you put that into a sporting context, of course, because these people have to perform at an insane level.
Yeah, so what's happening is that you're using kind of the method of bottling up. You're just filling up the bottle, and you will never succeed with that strategy of suppressing your experiences, your worries, and your emotions. But that is what they know how to do, and you need to look at it in this strategy of, if you know better, you do better. But these people don't know better. That's why they're doing this. That's why they're suppressing it, and that's part of the football culture, the sports culture, the competing area. So it is about getting bigger, faster, and stronger. It's not about being vulnerable, fragile, hurt, or what you could say, quotation marks, that I can't deal and cope with it myself. It's the opposite. If you come to this level, you have been out-competing probably everybody else. You're one out of a million who's getting to play in the Premier League. So it's not the normal thing to do. This is not the automatic thing to do, to say, hey, everybody, I'm dealing with something today. I'm very anxious before the game. You won't do that. That is the, in quotation mark, is the worst thing you can do, actually. It isn't in practice, but that is how they grew up. So the thing here is that...
So they think it's the worst. That would be the worst. They grow up in an environment where they think that's the worst thing you can do, opening up, showing vulnerability. But in fact, it can strengthen them if they're dealing with stuff, if they do.
It will always strengthen them. But you also need to look at it from their perspective. They have sports psychologists, mental coaches employed in the club, but do they actually use them? And do they dare to use them? Because if I'm saying that I'm really dealing with a lot of things right now, I can't sleep at night, I'm taking this kind of medicine, will it get on to my coaches? And will it mean that I won't be in the starting lineup next week? So it's like, is it worth it to open up about it? And that is like the balance you need to make with yourself. Is it actually worth it, or should I just... Because then you have like a good practice today or a good match in the weekend, you're like, I'm on with it.
But that's, so I really want to speak about this, the system, and what systems are in place out there. But if we park that, because I don't think that decision should be with the player itself, if possible. But I was interested in, let's just go into that. I mean, do you know what systems are in place in the big top clubs? I mean, you work in all of Europe, and I don't know exactly which leagues and which players, but obviously you work a lot in Denmark as well. But what's the norm for a top club? You say they have people hired, but is it just like an open door and people can walk in themselves, or is there some kind of, is it pushed upon them a bit? Because, you know, in my head, it would be the most obvious thing to say that every player has like an obligatory, mandatory session every week. You have to go once a week or something, because that way you take some of that pressure off them. And then what happens in that session is completely confidential, right? So, yeah, I don't know if you can tell us a bit about, like, get us in behind the doors of the football clubs. How is it working?
Yeah, I think that it's like mandatory that it should be very confidential. But I had a talk with a guy who played in AC Milan in Italy, and his response also was like, it's an open interview. He didn't want to use them because he wanted to use somebody else because he didn't trust them. And there was also rumors in the locker room in AC Milan that it will get on to the coaches. I think actually it was Carlo Ancelotti who was the coach back then. It was. And he was like, I'm not going to use one of those guys. So
who probably Ancelotti said that?
No, Ancelotti didn't say that, but he was the coach. The player said, I'm not going to use one of the sports psychologists there because it will get on to Ancelotti what I'm feeling and what I'm experiencing.
So in that case, if Ancelotti went out and said, I want you all to use it, that would completely remove that fear, because then it wouldn't matter if it came back to him, because he would be supportive of that. Do you know what I mean? Or am I?
Yeah, but I think it could be a strategy to try and say that you have to get a mandatory session every week. And then at some point, people will open up about different things, and you can have players coming in there and just talking about how good they're feeling and about everyday life and other sports. And that's fine, because you're just building a surrounding where they can, or an atmosphere where they can feel safe. And then at some point, they will get into the more troubled areas. But in the AC Milan case, the players were experiencing that if they said something to a sports psychologist in confidentiality, like, I'm not, you can't say this on, you can't put this message to anybody else, but they did. The sports psychologist really neglected his code of ethics, and he told Ancelotti about it. And when this gets around, everybody will just shut down and say, okay, well, I'm not going to tell him anything then. But of course, it shouldn't be like that in other clubs, but it is in many clubs. It is my experience that many players say, I want somebody from outside of the club.
That's crazy. For me, that's completely insane. It reminds me of Ted Lasso. I don't know if you've seen that series of where the sports psychologists come in, and he's like a bit of a dinosaur saying, I'm never going to use that. But then, of course, the whole storyline revolves around how he becomes friendly exactly with this person. And she does exactly what you're saying. She just says, we can talk about anything. It doesn't have to be sports related. And in the end, of course, they build that trust. And when he needs her, she's there for him. And she knows him as well. She knows what triggers him, and she knows how he handles things normally. So I think that's really interesting and quite shocking example. Do you know if it is mandatory anywhere, or is that a dream of mine?
I think it's a dream of yours. I don't know that it's mandatory anywhere, and I'm pretty sure it isn't, especially if we're talking about the biggest leagues. It's not mandatory. And I also know that some of the Danish players who are playing in the Premier League, that they have their own sports psychologist, but they also have their own physical therapist. So, and that is, for me, even more crazy, that they can't use the one who is in the club for getting a massage or getting a treatment in their groin or whatever it is, or in the hamstring. But it isn't mandatory anywhere. And it's a long talk, but part of me think it shouldn't be mandatory, because it also should be when the players are ready for it and open for it. Because for me, working with somebody who has been forced to come in here, it's the worst kind of job. I never want to accept it. If they don't want to be here, they shouldn't be here.
So let's talk a little bit about the media. We had a question about what could the impact be of the fact that Dele, only 3 weeks after his rehab, is sort of forced to come out. He mentions that he wanted to come out ahead and control the conversation, because his team was told by the tabloid press that if he didn't, they would run stories about it, which has been his life for the past many years. Of course, tabloid press running loads of stories, which he in the interview also reflects upon. and how they would just run story after story, which what basically wasn't true. So would you, can you talk about this, like the media and how that affects the players and in this particular case, do you think Delhi is ready for coming out and sharing this?
If it's, it has to be a very, very short answer, I would say, yeah, I think he's ready for it. He seems very present and very attentive and calm, actually. Of course, he's dealing with a lot of things, but in my opinion, the short answer is he seems ready. And I'm also pretty sure if he wasn't ready, you wouldn't have performed such a great interview where you dive into such traumatic experiences and you wouldn't be able to sit there. I mean, he spent like his whole life suppressing it and not dealing with it and trying to convince himself, I'm not addicted to the sleeping medicine. I'm not, nothing's wrong with me. I just need to get on with this. He is ready for it. Otherwise, he wouldn't have done it.
So you don't think that necessarily it's a bad thing that he was pressed into it by the media? Well, can you tell us something about how, what in your experience, which role does the media play in these players that you work with and then their mental state?
Yeah, I think there isn't a perfect timing. There isn't such a thing. If you need to launch a startup project, there isn't a 100% perfect timing. And there's a 100% perfect timing for Dele Alli. But I think that what comes out of this is that he is taking responsibility for it and that is empowering him to control it. So that is the best thing about it. And just also moving on pretty quickly from 3 weeks ago, he went to the rehab and now also doing this, controlling the media story, I think it's going to benefit him in the long run. Because if he said like Thomas Gravesen did at some point, I'm not going to talk to the media for the next year or 2 years, there is an issue about it that it can go back to the old habits where he's not dealing with it and not doing the right thing. So I think it's a very good thing that he did it. But regardless of the media has a very, very big effect on the players, but also how we perceive players and how our understanding is of the whole world. And from the player's perspective, it is a skill to learn how to deal with the media. And the psychological issue in it is that you will look into some kind of narrative psychology, because if there is a narrative about you that I'm a trouble kid, I'm a troublemaker, I lose my temper, I can't control myself, all these kind of things, and if you're getting bombarded with these kind of statements about you, you really need to be extremely strong in your self-esteem and in your belief in yourself to not buy into it. And at some point, you will buy into some of the stories about you, the narrative constructed about you, and it will give you an opportunity to like buy into it and start believing it. And that is a very, very troubled state to be in, because if you start believing maybe it's me, there's something wrong with me, maybe I'm just a troublemaker, I'm not like everybody else. If you start believing in that, at some point you will also start acting towards it, and you're actually confirming the puzzle about you that, well, you are just a talented kid, but you don't have what it takes right now. And what happens in the mind is actually that you kind of start looking for the last pieces in the puzzle that, yeah, okay, here again, I got a red card, so yeah, I couldn't control my emotions, my temper, and you just fill out the puzzle for yourself. And it's the same with more common issues for players, that I can't perform when I'm nervous, when I'm low in self-esteem or confidence, I can't perform under pressure, and then they have 10 great matches, and then there's one match where they don't perform because the mental state is drowning them, and they're like, yeah, here you go, I can't do it when it's like this. And then we buy into that experience because we focus so much more on the one single mistake we did in the 90 minutes game than the 10 positive things that we did.
That sounds like something where like weekly or like fixed therapy sessions could be incredibly beneficial without having to go into childhood traumas and other things, just like weekly going in and sort of get that focus back on what's beneficial for you and not dip into negative narratives in the press and on social media, where it doesn't have to be, oh my God, I have to go in and talk about my dad and my mother and my childhood. It can just be a conversation about this, you know? And it's crazy. It's crazy to me how quickly people are to pile on players with negative criticism, stereotyping as well. And I guess it's just a reminder for all of us that it's not just the media, but it's also because the media is such a big thing now. It's like anyone can open a blog or something that that someone else could stumble upon and share, and it could reach anyone in a few minutes or hours. So really, what we do when we go on social media also has a big impact. And it's incredible how there's actually a stereotype with young players a lot, which you mentioned here, like the laziness, the bad character, these sort of things. I wanted to ask you how that, if that affects them mentally, how can that affect, like, can you talk about the link between mental health and physical health? Because I'll give you a few examples. Recovery. We have a player, Ryan Sessegnon, in the Spurs squad, who he came to professional football incredibly young, right? 16, 17 years old. He started banging in goals for Fulham, playing in the Premier League. And we went out and spent a lot of money to get him when he was probably, I think, 19. Now he's 23. And he looks like a broken man. It's really sad to see his body language. And he keeps getting injured. And I can't help thinking, well, I don't know, obviously, it's important for me to state, maybe he does get mental health, coaching, all the everything he needs. I don't know anything about his situation. But to me, he keeps getting injured. And can you talk about this, like, how much can you improve if you fix your mental health on the physical health as well?
Mm-hmm. I don't know if he's getting help, but I think it's a reasonable statement to say he probably isn't, because in my opinion it really helps them tremendously fast. So if you, maybe he is getting some kind of help, but maybe he hasn't opened up really about it, because if he really was working with the mental issues, he would be a new player and probably also be physically much better. So there is a very, very big link between the mentality, the mindset, the mental health, and also how the body reacts. And you need to look at it like, if you go out for a morning session before we're doing this podcast and you run for 3 hours straight, you need to, your body is running a budget. You're low in glucose, in salts, in water, and you need to replenish these things. But it's the same with the mental side. If you're not in balance with yourself, you're running a budget. You need to have it replenished. You need to get into some kind of homeostasis phase where things are great again. And if you don't do that, you will always be running a budget. You will be running behind. So if you have a budget financially, you stop spending. But it's the same, like, if you're running a budget mentally, you also stop spending. You can't, like, go on with traumas and low self-esteem. You are injured and you are having very, very existential questions about yourself. Do I actually have what it takes, because I'm injured again? And if you have that mental state, of course you can't go out there and learn a whole new area about yourself. You can't go out there learning to talk Spanish, learn to play guitar, learn how to be the best version of you. And you can't go out and burn the field off for 90 minutes because you're running a budget. You can't, like, always hit on the speeder, like, go faster and faster. Sometimes you need to hit the brakes and say, okay, I really need to fix something before I can move, start developing myself and move forward. And with these players, as you mentioned, my opinion is pretty clear that if you are faced with mental issues, you can't, I would say it's kind of stupid to imagine that you can perform your best. And if you're performing your best, it's more luck. And it's a one-time thing. You can't, like, have a season where you're the best version of yourself in your career. It's not going to happen. So the link between mental health and physical health and also your performance is the biggest. So for a player, you can always work on, like, your physical health. You can work on the technical side of football, tactical side of football, and also skill-based. And that's great, but everybody's doing that. But it doesn't matter with those four factors if your mentality is not where it should be. Because if your mentality is not where it should be, or your mental health is suffering, everything else is getting worse. Your health, physical health, your skills, your technical level, your tactical understanding, everything is getting worse.
Mm.
And in this regards, it's also important to say that it's very, very difficult when you're running a budget, and you're running a budget, a low budget, when you're facing with this inner problems. You it's the most expensive thing you can do as a human being is to move your body to do something. You spend the most amount of calories, but your brain also spends like 20 or 25% of your calories. The most expensive thing you could do is move your body, but also learn something new. Mm. And learning something new also means that I have to detach myself from this childhood thing or this former thing or this mental thing, and that is very costly. But after 2 hours of training sessions today, I actually just want to get home and relax. And it's so demanding for me. And I don't have the ability to do it myself. Of course, I don't have that. But people just, and that is why they, of course, there's probably a reasoning behind you saying, well, maybe just get one session per week where you just talk about some of the things, because at some point you'll face an opportunity where you'll probably grab it.
It's crazy, no? Because you look at the amount of time they spend at the gym with the masseuse, the physios, just like take half an hour out of all that and just speak to someone, just have that respite mentally, complete confidence. I honestly don't understand why it's not just football, like why society, why it's not in the school system. But you know, I think that's something just in a minute, I'd like to speak to you about taboo and these sort of things, why it's not wider accepted in society and in sports. But yeah, it's crazy because as you're saying, there's so much pressure, and really, as I hear you, the pausing, like taking a break from something to reset and to give yourself mental space to maybe work on things, can be incredibly beneficial afterwards in your physical performance. But these players, they don't have that space, do they? They never have the time and space to take a step back. And like you and me, we could say, I'm going to do a sabbatical. I'm going to take a long holiday this year, just be with family and try to reset. But these players are driven to extreme limits, right? So what can they do to take this step back? Is speaking to someone like yourself the only way, or are there other things that they can do?
I think it's always great to have a plan, and everybody knows that after you play the 90 minutes match, maybe you're off the day afterwards, or you have a light training session and then you are off the day afterwards. Why is that? Because you need a recovery phase. Well, if you're facing something that is filling up your mind and makes you not recover, you also need a mental recovery phase. And that is something you get when you sleep, for example. And that's very, very beneficial. But you can also get it like a part of the recovery phase is also just talking about it and dealing with the things that happen. Because if you played, you lost the game for the third time in a row, well, you're probably going to sleep very, very terrible the next 2 days. And your mood is going to be affected and everything's going to be affected. But if you talk things through, you like get to some kind of conclusion about the match, what you're going to take, move on forward, you're kind of like moving on from it. And otherwise, if you don't move on forward, you're like in the past and you're suffering from it. So it's for me, it's about initiating some kind of recovery phase where you need to make an evaluation about what happened and also then starting to look forward afterwards.
So we had a few questions, and someone asked, it's a hopefully short question. Someone asked, can Dele come back to his former self and get back to the same level on the pitch? Do you reckon? Is that possible? Do you think?
Yes, I actually think it's possible. And I'm, of course, also cheering for him. But I think it's possible because he is mentally where he will become or be mentally where he actually should be. And if you're mentally where you should be, everything is possible. I mean, I don't try to sound American, like you can conquer the world. Everything's possible. But if you are mentally okay and you're not limited by your past and you are self-limiting yourself, everything in theory should be possible. And Dele has tried this or showed that he has been a great player before. Now he's a few years older, and of course he can get a more mature player. So people also tend to get through trauma in a specific way. So like, and there's a difference between, we talked about before, like coming into a therapy session with like this Freudian session where we need to talk about the childhood. But if somebody experiencing some kind of trauma, like somebody in my family passed away, or my father got a severe illness, or my brother was in a car accident, something very objective, we come into the therapy session and we talk about other people about it, and we deal with it, and we move on from it, and we actually become stronger. Many people who have been faced with such hard conditions, objective conditions, they actually tend to move on stronger. But players don't see the objective things the same way as they see mental things, because mental things is not accepted. It's not an issue. It's not, I mean, what is it? It's negative thoughts. It's low self-esteem. What is it? It's not the same. And that is where many of them are failing, that they don't treat their mental issues the same way as they do as physical or objective issues.
And you mentioned, I wanted to ask about the addictions he mentions in the interview as well. Sleep, medicine, alcohol, some of these addictions that he mentioned, in your experience, are they the most common addictions that can be harming, like, to professional footballers, or what are you seeing in terms of addiction, and what is it that addiction does? Like, can you talk about these addictions?
Yeah, I think the most common things are sleeping medicine, some kind of medicine, drug, alcohol, and other stimulants that can suppress your feeling. That's also what Dele is saying, that he's numbing all his feelings. And the most important thing in this is that it gets them from A to B. It gets them from a very, very difficult state of mind into like a sanctuary where the feelings and everything is numbed a little bit and they get mitigated. So it's much more easy for them to cope with. And the most important thing in with this strategy is that you're treating the symptoms and it gives you some kind of relief, which is fine, isolated shortly, but you're not treating the causal explanation of why you're having the experience you're having. So it's not a causal treatment, and that is why it doesn't work for you to use addiction or medicine.
But these addictions, like as we just talked about, their programs are pretty heavy, so it's a big step for a guy like Dele to go into rehab. It's a huge step. He has to go to Everton, because if he didn't go to Everton, he would just have to disappear, basically, to go into a facility. And I mean, their schedules and everything from their sleep to their food is probably heavily controlled and under big scrutiny. So is rehab the only way when you have an addiction, or like that? Is there a different way out of addiction? Can therapy do it sometimes? Or
therapy can do it like 9 out of 10 times, and probably 10 out of 10 times. It's it can be therapy. It can also be a close friend. It can just be somebody that you're very, that you trust and that you have a very good conversation with. It can also be a psychologist, a coach, whatever it is. Just the main thing is either you're dealing with it or you're not dealing with it. And if you're suppressing it and not talking about it and not being open about it, you don't deal with it and it doesn't become better. You just bottle it up.
And is there a problem in your experience with the way that this sleep medicine, for example, is prescribed in the clubs? Could the clubs do more to inform the players about the possible dangers of these drugs that they're giving them?
Yes, sure, maybe they can do a little bit more, but I'm pretty sure that the players know. I mean, it's not stupid players. They know that, of course, this is sleeping medicine. I shouldn't be taking them throughout the day. And Dele Alli also knew that back then. And you don't need somebody to lecture him on a daily basis. Say, hey, remember, this is only for, you can take one a night, and if you take two or three, you need to let me know. It's not children that you're operating with, so I don't think that they could do so much more. I mean, if players want to misuse drugs or other things, they will find a way to do it.
Mm. Yeah, he says that as well. Without going into the specific drugs he's misused, he says, if you want to get a hold of something, you can. So let's talk a bit about this man up energy and the environment. and the taboo? Like what is it that you, through your clients' experience, that they're facing? What can you take us into the dressing room, into their day to day, and why it's so difficult for them to open up?
It's just a culture around competing sports. You need to be the best version of you, and of course it is actually true that you're not the best version of you if you're very hurt because your wife left you yesterday and or something bad happened. But it's not a common thing that you talk about what's happening. You talk about funny things. You talk about good things moving on forward. You don't stick in the past and sit down with your teammate and talk about the deep areas that you are not even, many of the players are not even sure that it's real. It's just something that maybe I'm imagining this. Maybe it's just me that's something wrong with. And so there's not the room for them to open up in a dressing room. It's not there. And for me, it's also fine. I mean, if they go on a coffee date afterwards and they go for a walk in the woods, they have a good talk. Yeah, sure, that's fine. But in the locker room, the atmosphere is just something different. You're priming yourself. You're getting ready, putting on your clothes, and doing some prehab, and that is what is going on in the dressing room before. But of course, in some situation, there was an interview with Cristiano Ronaldo at some point where he said, it was actually with Marcelo from Real Madrid, where he said that Marcelo was sitting with Casemiro and Danilo and one other from Brazil. And then Ronaldo came and said, before the Champions League final against Liverpool, he said, "Oh my God, I don't know how about you guys, but my stomach is really turning itself. I really feel some butterflies. I really don't feel well in my stomach." And the players were just like, the Brazilian players was, "Oh, wow. Is Cristiano Ronaldo feeling like that? Well, then nothing is wrong with me because I'm feeling exactly the same before the Champions League final." And it was such a relief for them. So people can talk about it, but it's not a very common thing you see. And I think it was just a short thing that Ronaldo said just to get it out in the air. But it actually helped them a lot. And you can draw a reference to say, what kind of effect is this going to have that... that Dele came up with this interview, well, it's going to have a tremendously positive effect on many other players and people in the world because they know I'm not alone and somebody else is actually also feeling this. So it's going to help them so much.
So you would say for the players, they could speak to someone for whether it be friends, family, professionals like yourself, or the people available at the club. And all peoples do have all clubs do have these people hired, right? In your experience, it's not like there's a huge gap where, I don't know, some kind of championship club all of a sudden doesn't recognize the importance of sports psychology and stuff. They all have teams of mental coaches
Yeah, you can say that everybody has coaches for psychology or mental coaches, but it's also about what, how much are they there? Because it is like performer. Many of them have a mental coach employed and he'll be there two times a month or something. So you have a sports psychologist, but it's just for the show off. It doesn't do anything. But if you have somebody there or two or three people there full time, in my opinion, then you're taking it serious. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we as a spectator, we can do a lot of things by not piling on, writing negative narratives online, as you said, because it's the narrative that the player needs to control, and the more negative narratives they have to fight against, the more chance there is for them to dip into that negative energy and start believing it is them, it is true what they're reading or hearing and reading in the media or on social media. So I don't think we can emphasize enough how we need to think twice when we pile onto this, no? The negative narratives. Yeah. And then the clubs, they can take it more seriously by respecting the confidentiality, trying to make it normal for the players, accept it, and have a culture as well, right? Where that's something like right now, Tottenham have Ange Postecoglou come in, and I don't know exactly what the culture is like. I mean, we can guess from the outside, but I could dream of him having a culture where we want to be open with each other, we want to see each other as persons, not just as supreme athletes, because that can build some kind of confidence between ourselves to to share maybe also the not perfect things. Counter that with maybe someone like Conte, where feeling you had was perform, suffer and struggle, and you know that again the narrative around what it takes to be an athlete. You can have so different coaching styles, right? Can you talk about this, like how the coaching style affects the player?
Everybody is in this level of the game, and they know how to perform, and how to struggle and put an effort in it. Everybody knows that. You don't need somebody to say, "Yeah, you really need to run everything you can today." It's they know it's implicitly in everything they do. So what Dele Alli is also saying when he's talking about the staff behind Pochettino is that they were so understanding and they were so caring, and it just helped them so much because they just feel this is also what you feel. I mean, they are just human beings. Of course, they need to pressure themselves, but they also need like the. You can always say like it's a childhood. You need the father to lecture you in certain things, but you also need the emotional love from your mother. And it's the same with the players here. Of course, they need to grind on and do great things and push themselves to the limit. Yes, but sometimes they also just need to be understood as a human being and just be themselves and not being under pressure. You also need to like get outside of football and performance area. Otherwise, you're going to burn out. Mm. And in what you said before, I think it's very important with the way we use media and also how we comment on people. And I think the right thing to say and to do is that you never know what people are dealing with. I mean, the people you meet on the street or the people you see in the clubs, you don't know, but everybody's dealing with something. So to try and not judge people and just disagree with the actions and the behavior that they do, because you don't know why they're doing what they're doing. It's usually not because they're in a very, very great state of mind if they are being a horrible person. It used to go hand in hand that if you are facing with something very, very difficult, then you can be a worse edition of yourself. But if you're thriving in life, you're doing great, everything's good, of course you also do great. You don't do stupid things then.
And that's something I guess we can take that's completely to a general level. I mean, it's a big lesson in life, isn't it? Like when you meet someone who acts in a way you don't like or acts out in any way, yeah, just remind yourself that there can be a million reasons why that person is having a bad day or is having behavioral issues because something happened. No one is born to be a bad person or born with bad behavioral issues. There's always something behind. So the more compassionate we can be towards that. And that's the same for professional footballers. If Oliver Skip has a bad game, maybe he's trying to recover from an injury, but they're being forced to play. Maybe, yeah, as you said, his brother was in a car accident. You never know what happened, and we only know half or not even half the story. So I think that's really good advice. I wanted actually just to talk about. And I don't know if this will be the last, but these people, like what role does it play that a lot of these people move away from home as teenagers, or kids, and in a certain way live these like nomadic, rootless lives in a big chunk of their life, formative years when they're young. Years that for you and me, having maybe a more normal life trajectory, we have a lot of care and when we go in this phase from child to adult, we are we are in very safe environments with a lot of comfort and care, and those are some of the years where we are defined, you know, in our values and socially. But these kids are removed from that, and often they will have to move from place to place. Like there's a new documentary about Eric Dier. He moves to Portugal when he's a young kid, and he starts first just on a human level. He has to move country, then he has to start playing football without knowing the language. Then they actually move to Spain just as he started, and he travels alone on a plane to keep playing for his Portuguese club. Then he comes to Everton for a year and a half as a youth player. And then he comes back. Like, imagine, I can't even imagine what that would take to keep focus, keep your values in order. And often we then hear, oh, you know, Troy Parrott has a difficult personality. He needs to work on his personality. But yeah, can you talk about this part of a footballer's life and how that can maybe be something that comes up later in their career that they have to deal with?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things in what you just said, but I was just thinking about when Dele Alli said that also in his prime time, he was doing what was inside of his comfort zone. He's replicating what he's used to. So in his childhood, he grew up with the 10 people hanging around in his mother's apartment doing parties, house parties, and you kind of like tend to replicate these kind of things. So I think that it is a matureness thing that when you move to other countries, you are living a nomad life. It's something that can make them more robust and make them stronger, but it is, of course, very, very difficult. And in my experience, everybody needs somebody there for them, because I would say before a football player meets his potential wife and get kids, they are, all of them are feeling pretty lonely, and many of them are feeling extremely bored, usually on a daily basis. So it's very, very difficult to, it's always difficult for everybody to move to another country, a new culture, a new language. It is very difficult, but it's also, it is part of the game, and it doesn't necessarily need to affect them in a negative way, but many of them are starting to long home and the homeless feeling. But this is part of the game where you need to work with somebody and handle these kind of issues that you're faced with, because otherwise you will start entertaining yourself with not healthy stuff. You'll start doing stupid stuff. So it is an opportunity to do wrong things, because I think the right thing to say is that what is getting you to the top isn't necessarily, or it isn't at all, what is going to keep you on the top. So you're a very, very talented football player in your teenage years, and then you break through everything and you are on the national team when you're 20 years old, but you can't use the same strategy. It's not going to keep you there. You need a much bigger and better supportive team behind you, because you're going to be faced with so many difficult.
And in your, I've got a few questions on this. I think it's really interesting. But in your experience, the players that keep developing, keep creating new sides of their talent, and like a Harry Kane who keeps showing us new skills, like in your opinion, these players like Cristiano Ronaldo that make it to the top, do they use mental coaching? Are they like, is there a pattern where the best of these, the best and most successful athletes, they also recognize at some point early in their career that they have to get this sort of like mental guiding as well?
I think the common thing is that they get through adversity, and they are not letting the past affect them in the future. So if they're using a mental coach, or they just have a very supportive parent, or the girlfriend's very good for them mentally, it's totally fine. So I think the common thing is that they deal with it and they move on with it. Because if you don't do that, you're not going to develop into some kind of world-class player that we'll read about in the history books. You can have a talent, that's one thing, but many talented players just, yeah, they can actually stop playing in the 20s. So the common thing is that they either by themselves or with help, they move on from the short-term adversity, and they use it in a productive way in the future.
Mm-hmm. And on the young players, because I think this is really interesting, and my hope would be that clubs recognize their own responsibility when a player shows signs of loneliness or start having bad behavior, like, I don't know, sex addiction or house parties or drugs or whatever it might be. It can be less serious things as well. That the club say, well, maybe we need to change the way we support these young players. Because I think the tendency in the spectator and in the whole football world is to look at the individual. There's a problem with this individual rather than the system. Would you agree to this?
Yeah, I do. But we also need to keep in mind that these players are world-class actors. They put up a facade, and it can be very, very difficult to spot that there's something wrong. But I would say that the people that care about them the most, it could be their family, their closest ones, their relatives, they always are the first one to detect a change in behavior. They are the first one to notice that, even before the player itself. So the people around them will probably be the first one to notice when something's wrong or that there might be some inner problems. But I don't know, because if you are employed, in my opinion, you can't be employed. I only work with individual clients here. But if I was employed in a football club and needing to observe 25 players, it's very, very difficult. It's such a big job because you need at least a team of 5 psychologists to be, so you can focus on these 5 players and another one can focus on other 5 players, because you can't, like, it's too demanding that you can see exactly what's going on with 25 different players. And the manager itself, the coach, he can't do that for sure. He's busy enough with just dealing with the performance side and the tactical side.
Yeah. It's also interesting what you said about being able to cope with new information. Like, player like Sessegnon, we mentioned, injured, maybe struggling mentally. Again, that's completely unknown for us if he is, but the body language suggests he might be. And he also put out a statement recently about how sad he was with this new injury and how difficult it was for him. That also tells me that he is struggling. How it will be so difficult for him to cope with the new management team trying to implement a new system, where to run, what to do. But yeah, is there anything we haven't mentioned that you'd like to tell from your world or from this interview with Delhi?
I just think that the last thing in regards of an injured player who is feeling and also expressing that he's very sad, that the most important thing to him to do this week or the next month is that he needs to dive so much into this area where he's talking about why I'm feeling sad, what is the sadness all about, and how am I just feeling. He needs to do that so much that he's getting on with it and he's getting tired, like, oh my God, I don't want to speak about it anymore, because then he has been dealing with it and then he's ready to move on forward. And if you haven't been dealing with it, you're just suppressing it and it's just waiting to pop up at some point and affect you even more. So the key is that deal with things, otherwise it's going to affect you in the long run.
Mm-hmm. And I guess it's going to be interesting to see how this area develops in professional football. I mean, I have a feeling that in 20 or 50 years or something, people are going to look back and be like, how mad that we didn't have more focus on this, more people hired to do it. Mandatory sessions, as we talked about. But maybe that's just my personal hope. Henrik, thank you so much for being with me today and telling us about this world of sports psychology. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, I just want to say that it's very remarkable with the interview here, but it also kind of pops up in your mind, like, imagine how many other players are dealing with such difficult things. And you just know in this football area with homosexuality, it is there. It is there a lot. It is the numbers are so much higher, but they it's the culture and
that's
so the numbers are always bigger than we imagine.
That's something I'd really like to do another episode about, to be honest, because it's also something that's a lot on my mind. How we know the numbers and we know that there are next to none that come out as homosexual. So what that does mentally as well, it's such an interesting conversation. But yeah, I think that would be for another episode. But thanks for sharing that as well. We know how difficult it must be to struggle with coming out in a very heterosexual environment. And if you know that you have to carry that as well, you know, and hide that, and you say they're good actors. And yeah, oh my God, I can't imagine how difficult it must be. And yeah, that's just another area that piles on the pressure of these young players and these young people. But Henrik, thank you so much for being with us today. And it's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
Yeah, come on you Spurs, and good luck to Dele Alli. Maybe he'll come back to the club in a couple of years. Score the final goal in the Champions League final.